We are now recording.
Thank you very much, operator. This is Julie Hedlund. Happy New Year to everyone, and welcome to the International Registration Data Working Group call. I will now give a brief roll call. From the working group members, we have Rafiq Damik, Zhangkang Yao, Avery Doria, Robert Hutchinson, Steve Crocker, Steve Metallet, June Theo, and as our co-chairs, we have Edmund Chung and Jeremy Hitchcock. And from staff, we have Gisela Gruber-White, Steve Sheng, Dave Piscatello, and myself. And we have apologies from Ray Pilzak and Eric Iriate. Did I miss anyone? Thank you. What I'd like to do is just briefly review the agenda for today's call, which is scheduled for 60 minutes. First on the discussion is the draft topics provided by Dave Piscatello, and I'll ask Dave to maybe briefly highlight those. I have sent them to the list, and also they are linked from the wiki. Following that discussion, perhaps we could discuss next steps and action items. And also on the schedule, on the agenda, is discussion point on possibly rotating meeting times. We've had a request from Jay Daly, who is a working group member located in New Zealand, that perhaps we could rotate the meeting times so that he will be able to join us. It is, unfortunately for him, at this time, 3 o'clock in the morning, which is very inconvenient. And then any other business that we wish to discuss would be on the agenda. Are there any additions to the agenda or changes? Thank you. So with respect to the topics, discussion topics, it was discussed at the last meeting that it might be helpful to have some possible draft topics for the working group to consider as possible areas of study. And Edmund had asked staff, in particular Dave Piscatello, to suggest some draft topics, which Dave sent around to the list on December 22nd, and which I've sent again to the list in a reminder for the meeting last week. Dave, did you want to maybe summarize these topics a little? I know that people have the link, but perhaps did you want to set them out a little bit in general?
Sure. So the goal, as I understood, was to try to bring us into a little bit better focus by enumerating some discussion points. And the original request from Edmund was to try to find three main topic areas. I sat down and went through some of the went through the SAC document, went through the meeting minutes and the like, and bearing in mind some of the discussions that we'd had prior to Edmund's missive, I thought that there were actually three kind of meta topics. And the first of those meta topics was essentially what do we require from internationalized registration data. I chose to create some sub-items under that to bring some clarity into that question. And the sub-items are basically pulled from statements that were made during the course of conversations and also from the subject document from ESSAC. I think it's and we can discuss all these, but I think it is a goal that a user could submit or have a domain name displayed in both the IDNA label and ULABEL formats, that the registration data be extensible to accommodate users who would benefit from the ability to submit and have registration information displayed in what I euphemistically call familiar characters from local languages and scripts. I don't want to get into the details of glyphs and things like that in this working group, primarily because I'm not qualified to do that. But my general sense is that if I if I am a Chinese resident in the People's Republic of China and I want to wants to access, a website, I'd like to use a domain name in a set of characters that I'm familiar with. And the same would be true if I were, in a country that used Arabic or Cyrillic or some other, character sets. When you think of B, however, you start to realize that there are some implications about what you accomplish if you do that. And so, item C under this first meta topic is, does this notion of extensibility imply that there are several representations of the same registration data, but in different languages or scripts? So here, what we had discussed was the possibility that there would not simply be one registration record, so to speak, that contains the contact information for the registrant, the sponsoring registrar, the registrant's administrative and technical contacts, but perhaps multiple. So there's contacts as an example. One of the comments that was made, that was brought in, was, I think it was from the W3C consortium, was considering the adoption of a format for civic address information that is, quote, reasonably functional around the globe. So this was something I think Thomas Ruffler made in a correspondence with Steve Crocker. This is kind of synergistic with that comment that and the work that ICANN staff had done relating to the Universal Postal Union formatting for letters. And so I brought that up. I think, again, relating to the implications from B, is it possible to adopt an ICANN policy that meets the expectations and needs of Internet users around the globe and correspondingly has a high probability of adoption by ccTLD operators as well? So not necessarily that ICANN is, or we would suggest that ICANN would overreach and suggest policy for ccTLD operators, but clearly if we could come up with a policy that was that accommodated many, many concerns and that was appealing to, to a broad, set of the ccTLD operators, then one wonderful goal would be to have some uniformity across the way that registration information were collected, irrespective of whether the TLD operator were an ICANN, GTLD, or a ccTLD. I guess there are two other sub-items under this first meta-topic, and one is that the registration data be collected and displayed uniformly in manners that would allow applications to process data efficiently. This addresses the concern about automation and the difficulty of providing legitimate automating applications with the ability to easily parse data and easily understand and recognize and discriminate between the different elements of a registration record. The last item in this one was that it would be useful to understand whether there is an opportunity to do some filtering or processing to reduce opportunities for deception or misuse when characters from multiple scripts are used in composition of registration data. So in the same way that the IDN guidelines attempt to prevent the intermingling of characters from different languages and scripts that would create some sort of deception, like a Cyrillic A in the word PayPal. The same would be, the question would be whether it's worth investigating whether the same kind of filtering would be appropriate for composition of contact information, as an example. The other place that might be relevant would be in name servers. Yeah. The next meta topic would be what should the registration data look like? Today, registration data are largely in US ASCII 7, although there are some areas where Unicode UTF-8 is used. who is data are collected and essentially delimited by white space or delimited by carriage returns or some other ASCII character. One of the questions that that we have been discussing involved the use of something like a standard meta language like XML to tag either individual elements or blocks of data in a form where specific XML tags would identify what the data contained within the tags represented. So as an example, you might have something like an open bracket admin-contact close bracket with an individual's entire set of information that relates to a contact. Or you could just simply have something like a contact address or a contact name. So those were a couple of different ways to perhaps represent the data, and we can discuss those. The last point, to try to summarize quickly, I don't want to take up too much time, this is hard because there was a lot here, is whether, what methods of delivery are needed to support internationalized registration data, and how does internationalizing registration data affect existing protocols. There were a couple of suggestions from the ESSAC recommendations in terms of using IRIS and CRISP. Perhaps there is because there has been some significant concern about the availability of IRIS and CRISP implementations, and in some people's minds there is a perception of some heavy-handedness in implementation, it might be important to consider or worthwhile considering what Aaron and the regional Internet registries have done with the RWS service in terms of using XML over HTTP. Then, in addition to looking at those protocols, it would probably be appropriate to think of whether there is an impact to the EPP, the provisioning protocol for registries, and whether there is some complexity to operating both either a Whois port 43 interface or a web-based interface as a result of this. And then lastly, there was a comment about whether the work that the IETF has been doing in what's called VCard area might be relevant to this. So this was my sort of initial and best shot at trying to consolidate into three meta topics a fair number of important subjects. Thank you, Julie.
Dave, this is Julie. Thank you very much. I'd like to open up the discussion. Perhaps we could take each of these meta topics at a time, beginning with comments on some of these suggestions for what we would require for internationalized registration data. And I do urge you, when you do have a comment, if you could provide your name so that the scribes will be able to include it in the notes for this meeting. Would either of our co-chairs like to start with a comment? Edmund or Jeremy?
Sure, this is Edmund. Hello?
Hello, yes, Edmund, go ahead.
Hello? Okay. I guess I'll start with a few comments. First of all, I really want to thank Dave for the really comprehensive set of items. I think it's a really good start for us, and that's exactly what I was sort of suggesting, so I think it's very useful for us. First question is sort of looking at the three meta topics, it seems to me that I think number one definitely makes sense, which is sort of like what data is to be collected and displayed. Two and three seems to me that they might be very much intricately related in terms of the granularity of the display and formatting and how it's transmitted or transported. So I'm sort of thinking if we are grouping, focusing a discussion, maybe two and three might have to go together because they have some interrelationship. And then I guess the second question is a little bit more, I guess, I'd like to get a sense from people from the group how much we think that it's within our scope to either recommend or even make recommended suggestions or adjustments to protocols or what protocols to be used, whether that's sort of within the scope of this, whether people feel it's within the scope of this group on that particular topic, how much of the protocol side we should venture into. And then the third question is slightly more open, which is sort of how do we want to go about this? I think it might be the next step. So that might be the next step. But how do we go about this? Do we split up? Do we, you know? But the main point is to really try to focus the discussion. And in the last few times, we felt at least I think we've tried to cover a lot of grounds. Put us into a position to actually produce something for according to the timeline. So those are my initial thoughts.
Thank you, Edmund. This is Julie. Jeremy, do you have some comments you'd like to add or questions?
Sure. This is Jeremy. I have a number of comments, but I'll probably just limit them to a few higher-level ones, at least for now. I'd just be interested in hearing what other people are thinking about this topic. For who is and any sort of contact data, the expectation is that there is no expectation right now that character sets are identified as far as what language tag that they're associated with. So there's some requirement that has to be put in or some application level awareness of guessing or something along those lines. And I think that really is something that this group needs to figure out what's the right responsibility, correct responsibility between application design and the Whois system. Certainly aware of the sensitivity of Whois and it being in somewhat of a okay balance right now. Also, just some general thoughts as far as registrars and registries, and one of the critical requirements, in fact, one of the only requirements that ICANN has had to terminate registrars over the past has been unavailability of Whois. I'm not exactly sure what the percentage is, but of the 40 or so registrars that have been terminated, lack of providing valid Whois has been a leading factor, or has been a factor in, because I think it's only one. It was in the old RA, the 2001 RA, was RRA, sorry, RAA, my apologies, corrected myself incorrectly. That particular agreement only had maybe two or three different reasons for termination. One of them was Whois. So kind of sensitive to the number of, what registrars have to do in order to make sure that this works correctly. And probably the last comment I have is that this is an area that RIRs probably have been, as Dave said, have been leading the way in terms of registration databases for contact information for IP allocation ownership. It's not exactly the cleanest data source, but in terms of looking at Whois or looking at some of those data sets anecdotally, and I'd probably say that those data sets are a little bit cleaner, and I'm not 100% familiar with the different systems that they use. I don't think that there's I think RIPE and RN use the same one. I think the others use their own. Somebody can correct me if that's wrong. But they have, they obviously have to deal with character sets. So there's some good work that's already been done in that particular area. So those are kind of my three general comments.
This is Julie. Thank you very much, Jeremy. That's quite helpful. I'd like to invite others from the working group to comment as well. Or questions or anything you want to add. We could look at all three of the metatopics, or we can begin with the first one, what do we require from internationalized registration data? Anyone? Okay. One thing I could suggest is to go back to perhaps some of these questions that Edmund has asked, what do people think about, say, the first item of you know, as we look at how to tackle these issues, do we feel that that items 2 and 3 appear to be related and could be combined as a topic? Any thoughts on that?
This is Edmund again. Yes, that sort of goes back to Dave as well. What he thought, he sort of laid out 2 and 3. It seems to me that it might be very difficult to discuss about 2 without also, you know, some discussion about 3. And just my general thought, for you know, whether Dave can give some thought to that.
This is Aubrey also. I'd like to add something.
This is Julie. Aubrey, please go ahead.
Okay, I didn't know if Dave wanted to respond to Edmund before I jumped in.
That's a good question. Dave, did you want to add anything before Aubrey jumps in?
No.
Okay. In looking at what protocol and what the protocol carries, yes, I mean, there is always some relationship between can protocol X carry XML or does it need to carry something specific that's hardwired within that protocol. But more and more I think of the protocols that issue's ending up secondary. So I think, and of course when you get to what can port 43 do, you know, you are going to get into certain capabilities of what can carry what. But I think that the topics are yes, related. I think all the topics are related at a certain level of abstraction. But I think at a certain point, the how you're going to express the data and the what mechanisms are going to even carry it are things that really do need to be explored in separate sets with the awareness that, of course, you know, at some point you're going to have to bring them together and make sure that they work together. But I think it gets confusing, at least what I've seen in the past in terms of protocol development, it gets confusing to both deal with how something is carried over the wire and how you want to, you know, express it, how you want to store it in the databases, how you want to do whatever. So I think that they are separate, but of course Edmund is right. At some point, they are related.
So this is Dave Piscatello. One of the reasons why I ordered these in the manner that I did, and one of the reasons why I initially separated 2 and 3 was exactly Aubrey's point. I think we actually need to understand what our goals are, which is why that was first. I agree that it's very important to look at the data. Largely because the kind of data that you carry often influences the protocol that you're going to use. Now, when you get into things like meta languages, that often doesn't have quite the impact that it had in the past, because we used to have fixed container sizes and dopey protocols that couldn't expand and things like that, and we're far away from that in the application layer now. But I didn't intend item 3 to mean that we were considering recommending or selecting a protocol, only that we understand that whatever we do to modify or expand the model for data that we use for who is information, we will have some effect on more than one protocol. And so the list under item 3 was really the sort of initial off the top of my head list of, you know, if we are going to change this, what areas might there be fallout? I think it is possible to support, you know, the kind of registration data that we're talking about using multiple protocols, and it may well be the case that different registries would choose to, you know, to do so with, you know, with registrars, and that would be a matter for registries and registrars to decide. Just as everyone wasn't on EVP at the same time, everyone doesn't necessarily have to be on XML over HTTP or Iris Crisp at the same time. The important thing is understanding that there are going to be some changes that will be by necessity introduced if we change the data in certain manners.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dave.
It's Edmund.
Yes, go ahead, Edmund.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. In fact, after listening to Avery and Dave, I think having the three different topics makes a lot of sense. Except that perhaps I'm seeing much more clearly now that number three, the third point is not really what methods of delivery are needed to support IRD, but should be what is needed from the protocols to support IRD. So, because when I read the number three, it seems like what protocol are we choosing to support IRD? That after Dave's clarification, I think it's right. It seems like what number three is talking about is what we need to do to actually implement number one and two. Is that?
Yeah, I think that if we were actually, Edmund, if we were actually to scratch the first sentence of that of item three and look at the second, we probably are closer to the mark. And that was the additional clarification.
Because I read the first one and then that took dominance over the second.
Sure.
So I remember I get that now, and I think I really think that the three areas make a lot of sense.
Excuse me.
Thank you, Edmund, and thank you, Dave and Avery. So I'm hearing then that we'll keep those as three discrete items as we go forward, but change the description of number three in saying what is needed from the protocols to support IRD. With respect to a second question from Edmund, perhaps we want to discuss a little bit about relating to protocols, what is within the scope of this working group with respect to suggestions concerning protocols. Does anyone want to comment on that?
This is Jeremy. I'd probably want to focus on the what we would require rather than the protocol. I think that the data is certainly important, and if have a better understanding or can nail down with the specific data set that we're encoding and what it looks like, we can probably have a better understanding of what the transport mechanism is. I think that both are really, really good topics, but having an understanding of what, I think it will help us in determining how. I mean, I'm probably the discussion that Dave had sent out about the different types of transport. I mean, who is port 43 still has to continue to work and be backwards compatible. I'm guessing that's an assumption that this group is probably okay with. Thinking about XML over HTTP, that might be something that we think about as far as just being a way to have some sort of structured format. But I think a lot of those type of things will be driven based on the data that we decide is most relevant or that we think is most relevant.
Now, this is Dave. I think that there are a couple of different issues relating to protocol, and it's probably worthwhile capturing them as agreements in the working group. We're not protocol developers, meaning the ICANN community. So my assumption is that if we have what we would do is we would identify the data requirements, perhaps identify or recommend the data schema, and then work with or contact the IETF and say, this is what we would like to do with who is data. We understand that this might affect the following IETF protocols. Can you help us understand exactly how they are affected? And so it would not be ICANN going and saying, you know, we're going to change EPP, so please modify the RFC in the following manner. It would be the communities getting together and understanding that the protocol, the data that we now need to, you know, to deliver requires some changes to the protocol. Could you please study this and make recommendations for how those changes would be incorporated into the into a successor RFC? Does that make sense?
Dave, this is Julie. Thank you for that. That's helpful. Jeremy, do you have, and Edmund or others, do you have any comments on that with respect to coming to some agreement along the lines that Dave has suggested as far as the protocol issues?
This is Jeremy. I think, yeah, that sounds good.
this is Edmund. I think it makes sense as well, but the only part, I don't think we need to get into details of it today, though, but the only part is I'm curious how we sort of pass it over to IETF. There are different groups for different protocols and might relate to different things, but that might be a tricky part. It might come to a part where it's tricky to identify exactly how we pass it over to the IETF to do further work. But I actually, you know, think it, what you summarized makes sense in terms of what this group should do and deliver.
Yeah, this is Dave. Edmund, one of the benefits of this being a joint GNSO and ESSAC effort is that ESSAC has, as members, several architectural board members and and a fair representation of people who regularly participate in the IETF process. So I think that we could go to Patrick Falkstrom as an example, and Olaf Kulkman, who is also works with ESSAC on a regular basis, and ask. And say, what is the best way for us to bring these questions into the IETF community? And I'm sure that they would be treated expeditiously.
This is Aubrey. If I can add something,
please, Aubrey. This is Julie.
I think that question is actually relatively easy to be any number of. I have a question on what Dave said earlier, in terms of I think it was totally correct that. You know, ICANN would not be designing any protocols. I think we may not even go so far as to say we have issues with protocol X or Y and just be presenting requirements, because that's going even one step into IETF work. I have a question, though, also on whether ICANN would be developing schemas or schemes. And I think Dave said that we might. And I'm wondering whether ICANN would actually go that far. Certainly there are, you know, people in ICANN that have that ability to do that. But would that be taking one step further into the doing and away from the meta, as opposed to discussing the requirements for something that's in a schema? Once we start defining a and maybe when he said scheme, he didn't mean schema, and I'm being confusing, but I just wonder whether that's also one step further than would be within the scope of this group to actually define, you know, the scheme for the data.
So, Aubrey, this is Dave. One of the things I've been trying to understand as I've been looking at this and other GNSO who is studies is, is exactly the boundary where, where defining the data requirements and, and actually proposing a straw man schema would be appropriate. Yeah, if you look at ICANN's data escrow agreements with the registry operators as an example, there are data schema attached as appendices to the, to the registries that say, here's what you have to submit, for escrow. So there is a precedent for ICANN creating, or working in conjunction with others to to agree upon a schema. I'm not suggesting that, you know, that anyone say ICANN would run someplace and say this is exactly the schema that we insist the world uses. But I do believe that there is merit in offering up a straw man if you have the competency to put people in, you know, put people in the same context as the committee or as the working group, and say, you know, here's what we were thinking. Here's the conjecture that we had. Here's where it's based. You know, we've looked at some existing, XML structures that appear to be practical and functional and are being used, and instead of coming up with a brand new one, maybe we could reuse this one with some extension. So I wouldn't be looking to wield a hammer more, rather I'd be looking to sort of bring an offering.
Can I comment? Sorry again. I think that's probably okay. When you say a straw man schema, that actually makes sense. And I certainly wasn't concerned that ICANN was going to go so far as to have a hammer and say this is what you must use, because the standards are always at best recommendations of what the space that I was concerned with, and you seem to be avoiding, is getting down to the, I don't know how many XML schema discussions you've actually gotten involved in IETF, where you spend forever discussing and arguing over nitty-gritty aspects of what will be represented in XML and how. And that, the thing between the here's a straw man, here's what we've thought through, and now all you gods of XML, you know, look at it, beat up on it, and be the ones that are responsible for creating something that, you know, gets registered somewhere as something that can be used in a standard manner. So the straw man makes a lot of sense. The ownership of XML schema that is registered is the one that I was worried about.
Yeah, I think we're in agreement. I don't want to go anywhere near that. I'm nowhere near a professed expert in XML to go and stand before the gods and say this is right and you're wrong. So someone else can choose to tilt that windmill. I'm happy to go and say, you know, this is you know, some crude crude XML that seems to at least give you an idea of what we want. If you could pretty it up for us and do what you believe is most appropriate, we'd be very appreciative. And and hopefully it won't take more than a decade.
This is Jeremy. Was something that wasn't selected. It had its own particular loose data set that was pointed to, and that was just that was a standard that we adopted. And I'm guessing that what we're looking for is a similar set where we're looking essentially to adopt a standard, and in the case that no standard exists, it's to kind of suggest a couple of things that we're hoping for that we'd want to adopt. Is that kind of the general thinking?
This is Edmund. On that specific point, I'm not really sure if we are recommending adopting any particular standard, but I think the idea is to lay out a set of specifications and requirements, what's optional, what's required and stuff, what fields, and then provide some a sort of straw man proposal of what might happen if it's done through a particular protocol. But that seems to be the case. I mean, if we just look at number three, A, B, and D, we see that, you know, I don't think we would come to a point where we would make a recommendation or suggestion of adopting one particular, but what might happen in the, you know, for A, or what might happen for B, or what might happen for D. Is that a better characterization than that?
So this is Dave. You know, trying to go back and understand, you know, how WHOIS has evolved and you know what the standards are, you know, if you even want to call them standards. It is probably going to change from, you know, which group of people you are sitting with around a campfire and who's playing the lute. I mean, there's just it's all folklore and evolution. We've gone about it. My personal opinion is that we've gone about as far along the lines of carrying folklore through the generations and not having some, you know, some convention as we can. And what we're encountering today is, you know, with, especially with internationalized registration data, is one of the showstoppers that says, okay, you really need to stop now and consider how you're going to get some uniformity and some, you know, some standard criteria that everyone will try to satisfy. And you know, I actually don't look at this as an obligation as much as an opportunity to try to go back and say, you know, we can now do a whole lot better job. We've learned a whole lot from what we've, you know, from what we've seen. We know, you know, a fair number of the issues, and we've stumbled over, you know, a fair number of the rocks. And so if we want to consider all that we've learned, here are some of the things that we might, you know, we might want to do. One of the things that I had wanted to suggest, following the, you know, the discussion of these three meta topics, was was a way forward in terms of, you know, what the group could practically deliver in Nairobi, and then, you know, and then subsequent to Nairobi. I don't think we're going to be done by March, by any stretch. But one of the, it might even be ambitious to just do number one. But what I was thinking of when I started going through number one, and the reason why it is probably more detailed than the others is because trying to get community visibility and discussion, and then, you know, some agreement on how to proceed on the requirements seemed like an appropriate next step. And so my sense of where we might want to go next is to take number one as sort of the initial task, and maybe an initial report that goes out and says, here's the working group's recommendations for, you know, for the requirements for internationalized registration data. And so I wanted to just offer that up to the chairs to see if perhaps that is the right way to go, and maybe the next iteration is for, you know, for staff to, you know, and for, you know, some of the members to sit down and tease out from this bullet item, you know, an initial draft of that requirement statement.
Ms. Edmund.
Hello?
Go ahead, Edmund.
Am I still on mute? Oh, okay. I think that's a great idea, and I think that helps a lot in moving the discussion forward, and especially having a really good topic to actually talk about in Nairobi. I do think that we should spend most of the time from here, at least to Nairobi, figure out some results from number one, and that's achievable. And you know, looking at number two and three, and you know, just from the discussion in the last 30 minutes, that might take a little while more to come to a better conclusion. But number one will help us move along, and it really is the meat of what we need to do in IRD, I think.
Edwin, this is Julie. Thank you. That's very helpful. Jeremy, did you have some thoughts on that as well?
No, I don't think so. I think I'm on board with what Edmund said, and and think that that's probably a good place for us to work, especially considering a couple months out, we're expected to have something back.
Do other working group members have thoughts on that approach to begin with item number one and try to draft an initial statement and some parameters?
Julia, this is Steve Crocker. I'm fine with all of this. With apologies, I need to break off. I've got another meeting that I've got to run off to.
Thank you, Steve.
Thanks very much. Bye-bye, folks.
Bye, Steve.
Any other thoughts from working group members on this approach? Edmund, this is Julie, and Jeremy. Would it be useful for staff to flesh out a little bit further on item number one as a straw man or starting point for the working group to look at for perhaps the next meeting?
This is Jeremy. Go ahead.
I guess, yes, definitely. I'd like to sort of also see it somewhat split into two areas, one of which being the sort of, I shouldn't say areas, but at least a set of questions to be asked and then some sort of a first kick at even answering some of the questions. So we know, I guess when we next discuss, we can talk about whether we ask the right questions and also, you know, whether additional questions to be asked, and then also whether some of the observations are people feel comfortable with.
So, Edmund, this is Dave. Under item one, everything is posited as a question. Are
right.
There other questions beyond those that you would want us to consider, or do you think that perhaps it would be useful to just sort of cut that out, put it on the mailing list, and ask people to provide, you know, provide some feedback on each of these questions, and then staff could sort of take a look at what the discussion, arrives from, you know, from the or results from the discussion online, and formulate an initial draft based on that.
No, yes, I think that works. And in fact, I think that's where we would start. And I want to keep those questions in the discussion rather than just, you know, in the next iteration having some draft answers, if you will. But that's really what I want to point out. I think that's, you know, what you have there is pretty covers quite a bit. And once we get into the discussion, we might have more questions, but they're definitely good starting points. But I want to keep them in the next document. That's really what I'm saying.
Oh, yeah. This is Dave. I agree that we can't lose the questions, because I think the questions are precisely what the community is going to focus on. And some people will say that we haven't asked all the questions. Other people will say we haven't asked the right questions. But certainly among the questions that we've asked, there are some that everyone or that a large number of people would be asking. So, okay. So that's then I think I have an assignment that, you know, I should repost at just at item number one, and then Julie and I will work on collecting and encouraging and nurturing comments from from the mailing list.
Jeremy also had a comment, I think, earlier. Jeremy wanted to.
I did. I in addition to this, I think what would be useful for probably both staff and the working group to consider is, as we're thinking about what we require, that we put together a list of assumptions. Certainly one thing that I can think of is, what are applications that are touching both computer-based and human-based that are touching registration data? So computerized systems that are doing this are provisioning systems between registries and registrars, human systems might be, you know, web whois queries, just in the sense of trying to think about what are the where are the different touch points that are that might have different that might force different requirements of different data. And I think that that might be some common ground to go into this particular question as far as we're thinking about trying to answer the scope of questions that Dave asked. And just to comment on that quickly, I think that it's a great list to go off of and look at what, you know, where are the requirements and what things need to be in there.
Jeremy, this is Dave. Could I ask you to quickly capture your what you've described about touch points on
sure.
an email, or perhaps it might actually be possible to just get the transcription and cut that out and paste it into an email, because I think that that's a very, very important aspect of at least, you know, one or two of the sub questions that we have under that item number one. And I know that. Is Steve Metellus still on?
Yeah, I'm here.
I know that you had some concerns, and I think the item E represented some of the, at least a summary of what I understood your concerns to be regarding deception. And if there's something that you could contribute or either embellish or amplify, that would be very valuable as well.
I'll try to do that.
Thank you so much. Yeah.
This is Jeremy. I'll send that off after the call. I'll have a better chance to think about it, too, and distill into something more intelligent.
Yeah, Jeremy, this is Julie. Thanks for that, because the transcription does take a little bit of time if you wanted to go ahead and provide something to the list. That would be great. And Steve Metellus, thank you also. I think we do have some good action items here. I do want to mention that we're now at the top of the hour, and I wanted to address quickly the question of whether or not we can rotate the meeting times for this this call. I would like to retain it on Mondays if we can, because of the complexity of scheduling more than 16 various sort of policy calls at on the GNSO. But Jay Daly has asked whether or not we could alternate the times, and my time that he had suggested is 1900 UTC, which is 8 o'clock in the morning for him in New Zealand. And I wanted to put that out there as a possibility for discussion very quickly.
This is Edmund. That would make it pretty tough for me, I think.
Yeah, I'm thinking that would be tough for you.
Is it going to be 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. for me? I don't have...
Yeah, I don't have this is Julie. I don't have it up right in front of me, but it's early in the morning, I know, I believe, for you.
Do we have people from Europe, actually?
We have people from the U.S. as well. And I was going to ask Jeremy, actually, since we do have co-chairs, Jeremy, that would be, I think it's 2 o'clock EST?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be okay. I'm pretty flexible on the time. I'm more cognizant of people on different continents. I mean, if just in the interest of time, I don't know if it's something that the working group thinks that we should do a quick poll over whether or not there's some flexibility. But I think that this time seems to work for the majority of us. But I don't know if that is actually the case.
And do others on the call wish to comment? I know Aubrey, you're in Europe. I don't know if that time would work for your schedule.
I go back and forth between Europe and the U.S., but I'm totally time flexible, except for when I'm on airplanes, which is too much.
Right. Others on the call, Steve Metellus or June or John Kong, I think that might be a difficult time for you.
Yes, it's a very difficult time. If 900 UTC... in China is 3 a.m.
We also want to try to start rotating these meetings at Jay Daly's request. So it would be helpful if staff sits down and tries to figure out a way to to foster participation from, you know, from different regions, even at the expense of doing so, you know, and having rotating, you know, rotating participation. We do that in the anti-phishing working group, and it's actually more empowering than it might seem to be, because you do get some broader diversity and perspective, and I think that especially in this topic, that's much needed.
One possible alternative to consider is, which is one approach that we use for some of the ICANN calls, is moving the meetings to weekly as opposed to biweekly calls, but alternating the time and keeping the topic areas similar with each call, so that the various people in the different time zones get to discuss some of the same things. That, however, does add to the number of meetings scheduled. But I'm interested in particular what the chairs think about this proposal. It is very difficult because we do have a fairly disparate set of working group members, and we're probably not going to be able to find a single time that works for everyone.
This is Jeremy.
Go ahead. I hear Edmund.
Sorry.
Jeremy.
Okay. Yeah, I'll go first. I think rotating is fine, and I just checked out, and thank Dan Kong for bringing it up. It's 3 a.m. actually. 3 a.m. is just fine for me, so I'm going to take that back and say 3 a.m. is actually okay for me, but I know it's not good for y'all. So I'm flexible with that time, actually.
And Jeremy, did that time works for you as well, say, for the next call?
Yep, that time works for me, and I think doing that alternating time is probably a good way to go forward.
Okay, then I'm going to suggest then that the next call, which will be in 2 weeks' time, will be at 1900 UTC, and we'll go on a rotating basis until we decide to change. I didn't have any other.
And we're keeping with a 2 week cycle.
Yes.
So
I would say let's keep with a 2 week unless we feel time constrained and need to go on a weekly basis. But we'll schedule the next 2 weeks from now at 1900 UTC. I didn't have any other business on the agenda. Does anybody have anything they want to add?
Dave and Julie, this is Steve. I can also help with the compiling comments from this committee on the working on the item number one. So just offer that.
Wonderful. Steve Chang, thank you. Appreciate that. All right, well, thank you, everyone, and thank you for bearing with us as we go a little bit past the hour. This is very good. I will follow up later today with a summary of our discussion for everyone on the call and those who could not be on the call.
Yeah, this is Dave. I'll get my post out probably late tonight. I'm leaving directly for the airport to travel to Los Angeles, so I'll be in transit for the next 10 hours.
Great. And Dave, this is Julie. You'll have my notes then prior to what you send out, and perhaps also comments from Jeremy and perhaps also Steve. Thank you all, and Happy New Year, and we'll look forward to discussions on the list and to talking to you in 2 weeks' time.
Thanks so much, Julie.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.